Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Since 1977, the Government Accountability Project has helped over 5,000 public and private sector whistleblowers in their fight to expose illegality, fraud, waste, and abuse. The following whistleblowers are currently traveling the country as part of GAP's American Whistleblowers Tour. Kathy Harris is a former senior inspector for the U.S. Customs Service at Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport in Atlanta, and she disclosed to the media the practice of discriminatory racial profiling. Rick Piltz is a former senior associate in the Coordination Office of the U.S. Climate Change Science Program. In 2005, he blew the whistle on the White House's improper editing and censorship of science program reports on global warming intended for the public and Congress. John Munsell, a small business owner and meat grinder, reported that a giant packing company, ConAgra, was the source of E. coli-tainted meat at his plant. The USDA refused to investigate his claims, shutting down his grinder for 4 months instead, which forced him into near bankruptcy. But he continued to spread the word about the tainted meat. His disclosures, along with deaths from the E. coli-tainted beef, spurred the recall of 19 million pounds of beef by ConAgra, one of the largest recalls in history. And then there's Dr. Susan Wood. She served as FDA Assistant Commissioner for Women's Health for 5 years. When she concluded in 2005 that Bush administration policies were tying up the approval of Plan B, not the safety of the morning after pill, she resigned and spoke out forcefully that FDA science was being held captive by the, quote, pro-life movement. Now, GAP says, as a rule, these whistleblowers are ostracized, alienated, and isolated. And yet, whistleblowing is currently on the rise. On today's Your Call, we are talking about whistleblowing, protections, and why the Obama administration is cracking down so hard on people who put their jobs on the line to expose the truth. Today, we're joined by Beatrice Edwards. She's executive director of the Government Accountability Project, a legal representative of Edward Snowden in the United States. GAP has promoted anti-retaliation measures for more than 35 years and defends whistleblowers through the Congress, media, and the courts. Beatrice is author of the new book, The Rise of the American Corporate Security State, Six Reasons to Be Afraid. And Beatrice joins me in studio. Hi, thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. So it's interesting, there's such a crackdown on whistleblowers, and yet, despite all of these sort of, they're alienated, ostracized, and isolated, despite that, in 2013, whistleblower tips to the SEC rose 8% over the previous year. Whistleblower complaints to the Department of Defense soared 125% between 2009 and 2013.
That's
so
right.
It's on the rise. Why?
Well, one reason is there are more laws now that protect whistleblowers, and particularly the figure you cited for the Securities Exchange Commission. That's a consequence of a whistleblower provision that was written into the Dodd-Frank reform law after the financial crisis in 2008, so that whistleblowers have more legal protection. And we also find, if you take the long view, whistleblowing does come in waves. That is, if one whistleblower comes forward with a very important disclosure and there is a reform movement that forms around him or her and the disclosure is addressed, then other people do come forward.
What protections do whistleblowers have? GAP recently praised final congressional action by the House to restore intelligence community whistleblower protections that had been removed from the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act of 2012. So what rights do whistleblowers have today?
That is a complicated question. And it's complicated because in the United States, we have this patchwork of laws which really covers industry by industry. We don't have a standalone single piece of legislation that protects whistleblowers in general. So the most important whistleblower protection legislation we have is the Federal Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act that was passed in 2012. And it was passed as a result of court rulings that weakened the original Whistleblower Protection Act passed in 1989. The worst decision the courts made for whistleblowers was in 2006, when the Supreme Court ruled that if you were someone who reported or made a disclosure of some wrongdoing that you discovered in the course of your normal job duties, you were not a whistleblower and you would not be protected from retaliation in the federal government, which meant if you are an investigator, if you are a law enforcement official, if you're a lawyer, an accountant, an auditor, all of the people most likely to discover misconduct, you would have no whistleblower protections. And that decision was reversed by the legislation that was passed in 2012. At the very last minute, though, as the negotiations were proceeding over the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act, the Congress stripped out protections for intelligence community whistleblowers, which would have covered many of the cases that we at GAP then represent. And it's interesting because the congressman who did that was Mike Rogers, who is the House Intelligence Committee, who then, after the Snowden revelations broke, said repeatedly that Snowden could have used internal channels safely, that such channels would have protected him, when, in fact, it was Congressman Rogers who himself made sure that such channels did not exist. Hmm.
What strikes you about the government's decision to go after whistleblowers and the people that they target? So Thomas Drake is also on this whistleblowing tour. He is a former senior official of the National Security Agency. He was prosecuted under the Espionage Act for retaining classified information about a data collection program that was costly, threatened privacy rights, and despite the availability of a cost-effective functional alternative that respected privacy, he was facing 10 felony counts and 35 years in prison. So the government cracked down hard on Thomas Drake. He got a lot of media attention. What else strikes you about the cases the government decide, or the people the government decide to go after?
The people the government goes after most assiduously are intelligence community whistleblowers. And Tom Drake's case is interesting in the sense that he was a forerunner of Edward Snowden. He worked at the National Security Agency. He was a senior official there. He, however, reported more about fraud at the NSA than about surveillance overreach. And the two things are related. That is, there's an old saying in Washington, follow the money. Mm. There's a lot of money tied up in these contracts to implement dragnet wholesale surveillance. And therefore, there's a lot of corporate power behind the crackdown on intelligence community whistleblowers.
And this is what you write about in your book.
Exactly.
About how much money has been spent since 9/11, and also that 70% of that money is actually funneled to private corporations.
That's right. And there's a revolving door between the security, the national security intelligence community employed by the government, and the contractors who benefit from these large long-term contracts.
I understand that a whistleblower who came to the Government Accountability Project about 5 years after 9/11 told your staff that when NSA staff met, a senior official said it was a gift to the NSA.
That's because exactly right.
The budget cuts that had been coming down as a result of the Cold War could be completely reversed, and in fact, they have been.
That's right. After the end of the Cold War in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, the NSA was floundering for a mission. and its budget was cut. There was talk of the peace dividend for people who remember that era, that the defense budget was going to be dramatically cut. And so 9/11 really was a shot in the arm to the intelligence community and the Pentagon and all of the contractors who implement the programs that are funded by taxpayer dollars.
We've done a lot of shows about the real budget when you factor in everything from the military to Homeland Security, and it ends up costing about over $1 trillion a year. Mm. What did you find out when you looked at these numbers?
Well, it's hard to tell from the numbers because so much of the information is classified. And that was one of the interesting documents that Edward Snowden revealed. Mm. He revealed what the budget really was for the intelligence community after 9/11. And it soared to $52+ billion annually.
From about $10 billion before 9/11.
Yes, and the NSA particularly benefited from a doubling of its budget. And now we find out what they're doing with those funds.
So what strikes you the most about what they're doing with these funds, and which corporations are benefiting the most?
Well, the one corporation that Tom Drake reported on was SAIC, which is a large intelligence privately owned corporation that was, and this was Tom Drake's disclosure, SAIC was developing a program called Trailblazer, which would have put much of the American population under surveillance. This was in the early aughts, without any privacy protections at all. As the program developed, though, it was the typical kind of private sector boondoggle where it never really materialized. The government was paying $1 billion for a set of PowerPoint slides and some ideas from some people. And in 2005, Trailblazer was simply shut down and abandoned. At the time, the director of the National Security Agency was Michael Hayden, who had managed the formulation of Trailblazer. There were absolutely no consequences for him, that the program was a complete bust and a waste of money. And in fact, he went on to become the director of the CIA. And now he's left government, and he is a principal in the private consulting firm, the Chertoff Group. Now, that's a familiar name. Michael Chertoff was himself the Secretary of Homeland Security under George W. Bush.
Hmm. What else did you uncover about the conflicts of interest and the money that's being spent?
Well, a number of these contracts are sole-sourced, and it's a kind of foot-in-the-door process. First, the corporation gets one contract. Then there is a cost overrun provision. If it costs more than what was initially contracted for, the government pays that. Then there's an extension of time, so it extends on. Then there's a follow-up contract. So it's a never-ending gravy train for those contractors who are lucky enough to be well-connected. The most interesting recent development, I think, is General Keith Alexander, who was the director of the NSA when the Edward Snowden disclosures occurred. Alexander resigned or retired in February of this year, relatively recently in March. He's formed his own consulting firm called IronNet Cybersecurity, something like that. I'm not sure if that's exactly it. And he is flogging his services to the financial services community, to banks, mutual funds, hedge funds, insurance companies. And reportedly, his fees are about $1 million a month.
Wow.
In certain areas. So he takes with him the knowledge and the expertise developed at taxpayer expense at the National Security Agency, and then sells that expertise to clients he knows well because of his previous position as the head of the NSA.
How, I mean, obviously the whistleblowers help you and the Government Accountability Project stay on top of all of this, but how else do you follow the money? What other avenues do you take to stay on top of all of this? Because it's grown into, it's so huge now. I mean, mm-hmm. as you said, $55 billion a year versus $10 billion before 9/11. How do you track it all?
Well, it's hard to keep track of, but the whistleblowers are a major conduit of information. As I said, Tom Drake was the person who revealed the SAIC program, and it was public knowledge, really, what happened to Trailblazer in 2005. There are various websites where you can track the campaign contributions to various congressmen and senators. It's interesting to see who the contributors are to members of the Intelligence Committee in the House and the Senate. And they are the major contractors themselves. And a lot of this is public information. We also use the Freedom of Information Act, and often we can get a redacted copy of a contract that's been issued.
I'm speaking today with Beatrice Edwards. She's executive director of the Government Accountability Project. Since 1977, they have helped over 5,000 public and private sector whistleblowers in their fight to expose illegality, fraud, waste, and abuse. A number of whistleblowers are currently on a U.S. whistleblowing tour, speaking with college students across the country. Beatrice is author of the new book, The Rise of the American Corporate Security State, Six Reasons to Be Afraid, and we'll talk about some of those reasons on today's show. If you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. What do you want to know about whistleblowers? I mean, what's so amazing is when you read the whistleblowers' stories, I mean, they are exposing everything from, you know, the government's handling of Plan B, how it handles global warming and censorship, dealing with tainted meat and trying to cover that up. I mean, so many cover-ups are happening. Luckily, a lot of these stories do get media attention, but some of them don't get the attention they deserve. So what questions do you have about the state of whistleblowers, protections, and what many call Obama's war on whistleblowers? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And then also, if you have questions about the American corporate security state, we'd love to hear from you. You can email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Beatrice will be speaking on a panel in San Francisco tomorrow at a conference for investigative reporters and editors. The discussion is The Other War, Cracking Down on Journalists and Whistleblowers. And Beatrice will be joined by the Pentagon Papers whistleblower, Daniel Ellsberg, and he'll actually be joining us in about 10 minutes to talk about his story, which is known so well by so many. Beatrice, what else do we need to know about what whistleblowers put on the line when they step forward?
Well, I think in talking with the whistleblowers who come to us, and usually by the time they get to us at the Government Accountability Project, they've already been identified, they've already suffered retaliation, they're already in the sights of whatever institution it is that they work for. And this is kind of a long answer to a short question, but in the United States, decades past, we had regulation of the private sector and oversight of the public sector. Now, it failed from time to time, obviously, as Betty Metzger's book details, but there were systemic mechanisms in place to control both government and corporate overreach. Beginning in the 1980s with the presidency of Ronald Reagan, that was dismantled. We've been privatized. Public functions have been outsourced, including war and intelligence, as we've been talking about. And the private sector now largely escapes regulation. So we have whistleblowers as the last feeble voice of the public interest inside the process of government operations and corporate operations. And frankly, I mean, if you think about it, A whistleblower is a single individual, and one person going up against a government agency, a judicial system, Citibank, Bank of America, that person is going to be crushed because one individual cannot fight a system. What we try to do at GAP, and we work with journalists and friendly congressional offices to do this, is we try to take the whistleblower and his or her disclosure out of the pressure cooker where he or she works and put the disclosure and the retaliation in the public domain so that people see what has happened that the whistleblower is talking about and what is happening to the whistleblower as a result of trying to protect the public.
And again, from 2009 to 2013, whistleblower complaints to the Department of Defense soared 125%. Can you talk about some of these stories?
Well, many of them are internal. We, of course, don't hear about cases that are settled favorably if there is an amicable solution and the person retains their job. And that may happen and probably does happen in many cases. But you can simply look at what has happened to the Defense Department since 2011. I mean, September 11, 2001, where the budget ballooned. There aren't really controls. There's a lot of secrecy. And people working for the government are generally pretty straight arrows. They see what's going on. And if there is some safe way to report it, they will do that. Some of the most visible whistleblowers that we have had from the Defense Department come from the offices that are responsible for oversight themselves. That is, they get the disclosures, they see how the people are shut down, and then they themselves become whistleblowers.
Do you think the public at large realizes what whistleblowers go through to reveal this information?
No, I don't think they do. I don't think they do. The whistleblowers that people are aware of are probably Jeffrey Wigand was one, the whistleblower on carcinogenic addictive materials in cigarettes. There was, of course, Daniel Ellsberg. And people with very, very visible cases like that do survive the process. But there are so many people like Tom Drake. Tom was a senior executive service. He was at the third level down at the NSA. So he's very successful and very responsible position. He now works at an Apple store in suburban Maryland.
Really?
He lost his pension. He lost his salary, lost his home.
And again, Thomas Drake was prosecuted under the Espionage Act for retaining classified information about a data collection program he said was costly and threatened privacy rights. He faced 10 felony counts, 35 years in prison. But in June 2011, he agreed to a plea bargain arrangement, which stipulates no jail time or fines shall be imposed on him. And so he was a senior official of the NSA, and now he's working at an Apple store?
That's right, at the Genius Bar.
Because
he's a genius.
Well, is it because he's tainted? And
exactly. They pulled his security clearance, so he cannot work in his chosen field. And he had a career in national security. And the interesting thing about him is that everything he said was correct, was validated, and they charged him under the Espionage Act because they found information at home which, when he took it home, was declassified. They reclassified it retroactively and then charged him with illicit possession of it.
Beatrice Edwards is executive director of the Government Accountability Project. They represent Edward Snowden in the United States. They've helped over 5,000 public and private sector whistleblowers in their fight to expose illegality, fraud, waste, and abuse. What questions do you have about whistleblowers, protections, and what many call Obama's war on whistleblowers? It's your call. We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard yet in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered, please join the conversation by calling 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free call, 866-798-TALK. You can also send an email question or comment to yourcallradio.org. The email inbox address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up in, about a half an hour at 11 o'clock, the BBC's World Have Your Say. At noon today, it's Bina. And then this afternoon at 1, David LaTulippe hosts Open Air. Watching the detective. Watching the detective.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable, and we will talk about the current state of investigative journalism with Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter David K. Johnston and New York Times reporter Sarah Cohen. They're both in town for the Investigative Reporters and Editors Conference, which focuses on the most effective ways of locating documents, gaining access to public records, and finding the best stories. We'll also talk about what it takes to investigate economic disparities. Today, we are speaking with Beatrice Edwards, Executive Director of the Government Accountability Project. She's also in town for the Investigative Reporters and Editors Conference. Tomorrow, she will be speaking at a panel discussion called The Other War, Cracking Down on Journalists and Whistleblowers. Beatrice is director of GAP. They have helped over 5,000 public and private sector whistleblowers in their fight to expose illegality, fraud, waste, and abuse. GAP says, as a rule, whistleblowers are ostracized, alienated, and isolated, and yet whistleblowing is on the rise today. So if you have any questions or comments about whistleblowing, protections, why the government cracks down so hard, the role that the media plays to expose whistleblowers and their stories and the stories they bring out, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Beatrice is author of the new book, The Rise of the American Corporate Security State, Six Reasons to Be Afraid. She says that we need to spend a lot more time talking about the fact that the intelligence budget before 9/11 was $10 billion. Today, it's $55 billion. 70% of that budget is paid out to private sector vendors. So what questions do you have also about that? You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We've got an email from Marie who says, I went to hear Glenn Greenwald speak last week about his new book, No Place to Hide. It was such a great eye-opener, especially about how the majority of the population do not understand the severity of this issue. Can you also talk about the role of the corporate media in all of this, which Marie says is quite frightening?
Well, I think Glenn Greenwald does talk a lot about that in his book. And for those people who have followed his interviews in the United States since the Snowden disclosures, you can see a kind of hostility of corporate media to him. And the most obvious or memorable example of that was when David Gregory on Meet the Press asked Glenn Greenwald, why shouldn't you be prosecuted as an accomplice to a crime for publicizing leaked or disclosed classified information?
So how do you think that has shaped the public's perception of whistleblowers? Edward Snowden, his revelations, and then Glenn Greenwald publishing these in The Guardian, and now he's a Intercept.
It's an uphill battle to get the truth out about whistleblowers when corporate media in this country, excuse me, does this kind of on the one hand, on the other hand, journalism as if there's no real truth of the matter. And so the New York Times, for example, will give with one hand and take away with the other. Every time some congressional official says that Edward Snowden is a Russian spy, this is a headline in corporate media, although on its face, it's inane and absurd. If he were a Russian spy, wouldn't he have just stayed in place and kept feeding information to Russia? So obviously preposterous allegations are given credence in corporate media and not questioned by people who should really know better and who do know better.
Mm. What do you think about the fact that a lot of Democrats also oppose what Edward Snowden did, including Hillary Clinton, who's now on her book tour? Do you think the public would have had a different reaction if this had happened under a Republican administration? And I'm specifically talking about Democrats and liberals and their reaction to all of this.
I think there is, among liberal Democrats, a real reluctance to face the fact that Obama, the liberal Democratic president, is a corporate creature just like the rest of them. He told us he was. He has said that he is. Mm. But it's like a love affair gone bad. We just don't want to believe it. And Hillary Clinton, I hardly know what to say. I mean, she also has parroted these allegations that Snowden is a Russian spy. It's just there is a corporate establishment in Washington, New York, California, Texas that alternates power, that allows a certain amount of change around the margins. But, you know, James Clapper said not too long ago, earlier this year, that actually the national security apparatus has been running the country for the last 4 years.
Mm. Beatrice Edwards is executive director of the Government Accountability Project. And now I would like to welcome Daniel Ellsberg to the show. Daniel is former U.S. military analyst who, while employed at the Rand Corporation in 1971, released the now famous Pentagon Papers to several newspapers, including the New York Times and the Washington Post. He was tried on 12 felony counts with a possible sentence of 115 years in prison. It was dismissed 2 years later. Actually, on this day in 1971, the DOJ issued a warrant for Daniel Ellsberg, accusing him of giving away the Pentagon Papers. Hi, Daniel. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. Good. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. So we've been talking with Beatrice Edwards, and you're both going to be on a panel tomorrow talking about these very issues. Just about the role that whistleblowers play in our society today, the lack of protections, the war on the whistleblowers. And Daniel, I just wonder, it's so interesting because the whistleblowing is actually on the rise right now, especially in the intelligence community and the DOD. What do you think this is? What do you hear from people who work inside government who want to reveal what's really happening?
Well, in the first place, the intelligence community, but very specifically NSA, the National Security Agency, was in clear-cut, blatant violation of the law and the Constitution, the Fourth Amendment, for years under George W. Bush, from just after 9/11 until arguably 2006 or even 2008, when Congress purported to legalize an activity of warrantless wiretapping that is basically unconstitutional. Whatever they vote on it, they can't simply rescind the Fourth Amendment, but at least they give it a cover of legality. Before that, everybody who knew that was going on, and that must have been thousands of people and many people in Congress, especially in the intelligence committees, knew that the government was acting beyond the law, acting criminally, and many officials could have been charged, criminally should have been charged, should be prosecuted still. Under those circumstances, many people in the intelligence community, not only Snowden, were confronted with a crisis of conscience and of their profession. Their indoctrination up till then had been no surveillance of American citizens without a warrant. That was described as commandment number one. And here they knew very clearly that their bosses were violating it, and many of them were able to see that that was without any compelling reason, that there was no great product from doing so that the country's security depended on. So it was a challenge to each of them to tell the truth, to obey their constitutional oath, the oath of office that they took to support the Constitution, or to ignore it and honor their pledge, their agreement of secrecy. And, of course, nearly all of them, except Edward Snowden, chose the latter because it was very much better for their careers, and they preferred not to be either in exile or prison.
We were also talking about one of the documents that Edward Snowden revealed, which exposed the budget of the intelligence agency. It has skyrocketed from $10 billion before 9/11 to about $55 billion today. And in Beatrice's new book, The Rise of the American Corporate Security State, she points out that 70% of that money is actually funneled to the private industry. Can you also talk about that aspect of this story, Daniel?
First of all, the Stephen Aftergood of the Secrecy News and Secrecy Project of the FAS has for more than a decade lobbied for the release of that entire intelligence budget through FIA requests and columns and whatnot. I always regarded that as more or less symbolic. Not that it was all that important, but to know that, but that it was something so ridiculously fought by the people who keep secrecy. Now, I have to say, I'm dubious that the rise has been as dramatic as you say, because I think that earlier $10 billion figure is almost certainly very understated. Mm-hmm. Remember, it's from years when they refused to give either the entire budget or any component of it. And I don't know how good our information really is about that, but I doubt if it was that small at that time. The fact that it is so large now and that it's been so largely privatized, and that is a new development, is shocking, really. It means that the invasion of our privacy, supposedly for national security, actually in large part for technological hubris, the very fact that they can do it secretly, so they are doing it. The fact that our privacy is so widely distributed now in private corporations, which, by the way, are not subject to the FOIA or to investigation by Congress committees to the same extent, and don't have nearly the obligations to the public that the government and the intelligence community supposedly do, and also which have, in many cases, other private interests to which they could put that information. That's shocking. It's outrageous, and Congress should investigate it and control it.
Daniel, how should the average person follow the money? I mean, it's great that we've got groups like the Government Accountability Project, the Project on Government Oversight. In fact, they just released a paper about the latest military budget and all of the waste that's in it. It barely gets a mention in the media. So how should the average person follow all the money that's being spent here?
Well, they really rely first on congressional investigation. That is a very thin reed, since the intelligence committees in particular who get this information and the armed services have been for so long co-opted by the people they're supposedly monitoring. They really act more as advocates for them and protectors of their secrecy than otherwise. So Congress hasn't done its duty by it or their duty to the Constitution. Newspapers are in some ways a better hope, but, you know, in many ways, as investigative reporting has gone down for budgetary reasons, but also because of the prosecutions of sources, our ability to rely on them is declining. When you say there are more leaks now, you're talking about people like Chelsea Manning, who's in prison for the next 35 years or so, Thomas Drake, who was ruined financially by a invalid prosecution, Edward Snowden, who is in exile probably for the rest of his life, hopefully not in Russia. So these aren't examples that people are eager to follow, and that's the whole point of their persecution. And I use that word rather than prosecution, which is also the case, and by the government. So what we as ordinary citizens can do can change our demands, what we expect of, not in the sense of likelihood, but of demand, of our representatives to do their duty of finding out, analyzing, and telling us abuses and just the ordinary budgetary processes of the federal government. They haven't been doing that, and we haven't been demanding that they do it. Both Congress and we, the public, have been hypnotized by this claim of that any breach in secrecy threatens our national security after 9/11, which is a hoax. It's a magician's trick.
That is Daniel Ellsberg, former U.S. military analyst who, while employed at the RAND Corporation in 1971, released the now famous Pentagon Papers to several newspapers, including the New York Times and the Washington Post. He was tried on 12 felony counts with a possible sentence of 115 years. It was dismissed 2 years later. On this day in 1971, the U.S. Justice Department issued a warrant for Daniel Ellsberg, accusing him of giving away the papers. We're also joined by Beatrice Edwards, Executive Director of the Government Accountability Project. They represent Edward Snowden in the U.S. They've helped over 5,000 whistleblowers in their fight to expose illegality, fraud, waste, and abuse. Beatrice is author of the new book, The Rise of the American Corporate Security State, 6 Reasons to Be Afraid. And you can join us at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from John in San Francisco. Hi, John.
Good morning. My question is, I understand that the Defense Department does not have an official auditing program. So all of the hundreds of billions of dollars they spent is not being audited, and they don't really have a good check on how the money is being spent, where it's going, and how it might be misspent. And I'd like to get your guest comment on that, please.
Yes, well, I believe Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld acknowledged that the inadequacy of the auditing within the Defense Department. In fact, he did that, ironically, just a week before 9/11, when he was describing mismanagement in the Pentagon as one of our greatest national security threats. And I think he spoke of hundreds of billions, if not nearly $1 trillion, that simply could not be accounted for of public funds that had disappeared into the Pentagon somewhere and gone somewhere. And that's before the Iraq War, starting in 2003, in which, again, it's been acknowledged that tens to hundreds of billions of dollars are simply missing. A lot of it undoubtedly in corruption or bribes to Iraqi officials of various kinds or to contractors. So there's no question that while we're penny pinching when it comes to welfare recipients, other people benefit very much from a trough of misuse and unaccountable funds in the Defense Department.
Beatrice, what would you add to that? Before the show, we were talking about why food stamps, for example, gets far more attention than the military and intelligence budgets.
Well, I think in the popular imagination, we often forget that the same people are running the Pentagon as, excuse me, who run, say, welfare programs. So the American population has the impression, say, that our social welfare programs are wasteful, although those programs are publicly audited frequently. But somehow the expenditures of the Defense Department, the Pentagon, the security community escapes our attention as a potential for waste and fraud. And we know from our own history that when you combine a lot of money with secrecy, you get corruption. And that's why whistleblowers are so important.
Secret auditing, but you know, Beatrice, I'm reminded when I was in Vietnam working on an interagency team for the ambassador in 1965 to 67. Another member of this team was a CIA auditor, that is a man who had spent most of his life auditing black budget covert operations. And I was writing a memo at one point to Ambassador Lodge describing the dangers involved in the corruption that was so endemic in the Vietnamese government that we were paying and running, really, or partnering with. And he made a comment that I've never forgotten. He said, Dan, the Vietnamese are no more corrupt than anyone else with unaudited funds. And in our government, the Pentagon, for instance, has a whole lot of so-called black budget line items that are not adequately scrutinized by anyone in Congress, in theory, by one or two committees in secret. But actually, in the intelligence community, more and more people have come out. I think William Binney, after 30 years in the NSA, has said, at a very high level, has said that the NSA essentially has no real auditing system. The NSA specifically, which is nominally a part of the Defense Department. And of course, now it's involved in enormous expenditures.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, John. Let's go next to Mary in Monterey. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning. And I'd like to, another good program, and I'd also like to tell your guests and thank them basically for their heroic work that they do, because it really is, takes a lot to put your neck out there. What I wanted to know is, especially given the involvement with the corporate media, it's very difficult to find a good reporter. It's very difficult because even when you do find a reporter, sometimes that is interested in putting information out, they again have to respond back to their bosses. And a lot of times stories kind of start and then they don't go any farther, or they get buried, or they get reported out in a different way. And also, you know, I'd like to ask about, in California, I guess what the governor just signed, a new bill, or basically, I think it was, I'm trying to remember how long ago, within the past couple of weeks, maybe a month ago, so that the public could now, it does not have to pay the cost to obtain information, and that is getting zoned back to the state. Can you comment on that, but can you also comment on how one could go about finding good media sources or people that they can go to in order to report stories?
Yes, thank you so much. Beatrice, Gap works directly with reporters, so how does that process work?
The story isn't all negative. That there are now a number of very competent online organizations that do in-depth investigative reporting about the issues that we've been talking about. For example, ProPublica is one of them. There's another one we work with that's called 100 Reporters. It's called 100 Reporters because supposedly the New York Times laid off 100 investigative reporters.
Wow.
But a lot of investigative reporters who have departed from the traditional print media have gone to these online consortiums, and they do a different kind of journalism. It's more advocacy journalism, and Glenn Greenwald himself talks about this. I may have my opinion, but I state my opinion out front, and the facts that I report support my opinion. So there is a kind of emerging source of information that you can find online if you look for it.
Yeah, and I hope that you listen on Fridays, because we have some really good investigative reporters on the show. They might not be on the cable shows, but they're doing really good work, and they tend to do, you know, mostly radio. So there's some really good stuff out there, and we'll actually be talking about that tomorrow. So thanks for calling in, Mary. We've got time for one more caller. Let's hear from George in San Francisco. Hi, George.
Hi. I suppose this could be put under the heading of computer hygiene, or it could be let's look at this from the flip side. There's a National Security Agency audit, or there's kiddie porn, or some other hot file that's dropped in your computer. You don't even know it's there. It's like malware. As an investigative reporter, how do you protect yourself from this? In what way is this key to providing due process for our investigators?
Well, yeah, and then to add to that, Robert Greenwald's film War on Whistleblowers, a lot of journalists said after they exposed what the whistleblowers brought to them, they were told by high officials, you no longer have access.
Mm-hmm.
So they're dealing with a lot of different things. Beatrice, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's really the battle for information and access to information. And we do live in an age of very rapidly developing technology. The technology can be used for us or against us. Journalists can use it, and the government can use it. And we're seeing really a heightening conflict over how technology will be used. And it's very important to realize that not only are we subject to surveillance, but we can also use technology to access more information if we're looking for it.
Daniel, anything to add there? The role of journalists here?
Yes, I do think that the problem with currently with NSA, with the surveillance and all this, is not just the loss of individual privacy, but the which is of great importance, but even and perhaps even more is the loss of investigative journalism, because they are investigative journalism. Our journalists are really not able reliably to promise their sources anonymity anymore in good faith. The NSA ability to know all the sources of everybody that a journalist is talking to and who they talk to really almost rules that out. Although, as B says, there are possibilities for encryption here if people make use of them. An organization that I'm in, Freedom of the Press Foundation, pressfreedom.org, pressfreedomfoundation.org, has been supplying journalists, newspapers, with encryption software that will enable them to do, in effect, what WikiLeaks does abroad, an American kind of WikiLeaks. And although that's a bit tedious to learn, it does at least go some way to protecting this possibility for private conversations. And I do think, in general, the problem is not so much auditing or the possibility of waste of money. The problem is how they're using that money and to what effect. And the again, the problem is not that too much is classified or that doesn't need to be classified. The problem is that too much is classified that must be public, that should be public, that should never be classified at all, because the public needs it to find out what their government is doing, to hold them accountable, to keep them within the restraints of law and the Constitution. And it's wrongful secrecy, not just unnecessary secrecy, that needs to be attacked, and which is being protected by President Obama and Holder's war on whistleblowers in the courts.
Final thoughts from you, Beatrice. We've got just about 30 seconds. What will it take to shift the war on whistleblowers?
Well, I don't know. I think more public awareness of what's happening to whistleblowers and what's happening to journalists. We ask people to think about what happens in the United States when it's a crime to report a crime, which is what happened to Edward Snowden. And for those of us who have experience living in countries with repressive governments, we know that we're just not that far away, and the technology is in place to make it happen.
Beatrice Edwards is Executive Director of the Government Accountability Project and author of The Rise of the American Corporate Security State. Daniel Ellsberg released the now-famous Pentagon Papers to several newspapers back in 1971. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll talk about the current state of investigative journalism with Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter David K. Johnston and New York Times reporter Sarah Cohen. They're in town for the Investigative Reporters and Editors Conference, which focuses on the most effective ways of locating documents, gaining access to public records, and finding the best stories. We'll also talk about what it takes to investigate economic disparities. Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.